Welcome back to Total Information AM with Tom Ackerman. I'm Megan Lynch. What makes the difference in whether someone is mentally sharp until their last years compared to someone who suffers cognitive decline at a relatively young age? Researchers at the Washington University School of Medicine are part of a long-term study that aims to understand how and why the brain changes with age. We're joined now by neurology professor Dr. Bo Ansis. Thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Thank you for having me today.
So I understand the study is divided into four parts, and this is going to be a pretty lengthy study from what it looks like. Explain those four areas that researchers are going to be looking at.
Yes. So WashU is a part of a couple other cities as well that are looking at how the brain changes across the lifespan. And what we think that when an individual who's doing very, very well, where they reach that goal is because there are different key inflection points or periods of time where there could be potential changes. And so early on in life, there are a lot of stressors that all of us have, and how that affects the brain can be very important. We're also very interested in midlife, when those kinds of changes like exercise or other activities that we can engage in, how does that influence the brain? And then in later life, especially in women, we're looking at the role of menopause and how that can affect individuals. And then finally, and the oldest of the old, what are those people who are doing very, very well versus those that are having some of those cognitive changes that you mentioned?
Boy, the brain is fascinating. How do you measure cognitive function? What do you use to do that?
Right. So there are many different ways. And so when we say cognitive function, we can do a lot of different tests. So those are those pen and paper and now computer tests that can be done. But we can also measure brain function by looking at and using MRI, so magnetic resonance imaging. And that gives us very detailed pictures of the structure as well as the function. So how different areas are talking.
Talk about how many participants you're really going to need for this study to get a good sample.
So we are looking for 1,000 participants. So that is across this age span to really tease out these kinds of changes. So there's a large number of participants that need to be a part of this, as well as we're really looking for diversity. So many studies have not really studied underrepresented groups, and a main focus of this grant is to really look at those underrepresented groups.
Wow, interesting. Men and women, what is the difference that you find there in terms of brain function?
Wow, that's a great one. And I have this conversation with my wife as well all the time. And I always tell her that the female sex is the stronger sex in doing this.
There you go.
So we all know that very, very, very well.
We all know that to be true.
I always defer to my wife. So the point is that there are definitely differences. And as I was saying to you before, specifically during menopause, there are definitely changes that we're now noticing within the brain, and that may affect cognitive function. We also know, and specifically with Alzheimer's disease, which I see patients with that, is that women are living longer than men. And so they can tolerate more of the changes that we see with Alzheimer's disease compared to males. So there are definitely sex differences, and we need to understand more of those differences.
You mentioned underrepresented groups. Give us an example.
So we're very interested in looking at African-American, Hispanic communities, and really doing those kinds of studies in those communities. We are actively going in. So yesterday I was in the city of Berkeley and was at their civic center talking to a lot of older women and men in their 70s, 80s, and 90s about brain health and coming to the community. We regularly go to Ferguson, and we actually are involved in community affairs there. And specifically what we do in those kinds of interactions is we have bingo. And we talk about how bingo and playing games is very important. And then we talk about diabetes and treatment of diabetes. So really looking at protecting the whole body and how that can then translate to protecting the brain.
How long does it take to plan for a study like this? How far back do you go?
Oh, that's a great question. So it doesn't just occur overnight. So it takes working with large numbers of teams. It takes a year to even think and start planning this out. Then you have to submit the grant, and then our tax dollars are going for these kinds of studies. So they're reviewed, and then if they are approved and get a good enough score, then they're funded. And so it is a long, complicated process. It's not something that occurs overnight.
I'm curious, you were mentioning for some of your younger participants that one of the factors may be the stressors and things happening in their lives. So will participants be at completing a diary, or, you know, how will you know, you know, what's going on in their lives?
Yeah, so we're really looking at those kinds of changes. We're looking at where they live, because that really influences your exposure to even air pollution. And we're actually seeing that there are changes within the brain within different substances that we're exposed to. We're taking daily food logs and kind of watching this. And then we're actually slapping on these actigraphs, so these little watches that all of us are wearing, and then we're measuring their steps and seeing what they're doing, as well as in our women, they're actually wearing stuff to look at how their changes in body temperature are occurring over a number of days. So yes, we are definitely looking at these different phases.
Through your career, you've been particularly interested in Alzheimer's disease. What in this particular study, what is the best possible outcome? What are you trying to accomplish ultimately?
Right. So when we talk about Alzheimer's disease, and this is really, really important for the general listening audience, is that it is a disease that does not just occur overnight. It is a slowly progressive disease. And we now have measures, including measures that have been developed here at WashU and in St. Louis, to look at blood-based biomarkers. And so we are actually looking at those blood-based biomarkers to make an early detection. And the idea is that if we can make an earlier diagnosis or see when people are kind of starting to go off of the normal aging trajectory towards Alzheimer's disease, can we give them interventions? And what's so exciting now is this is the first time where we really have new medicines that can now help kind of slow down that process.
I'm curious, my husband and I both had grandmothers that lived well into their 90s. You know, they were young women during the Depression. So, you know, they dealt with stress and hard times, but yet they were so sharp up to their last days. And I think for all of us, we want to know what's the key to that. I know that's part of what you're studying, but do we have solid theories right now on what contributes to that for some people?
Yeah, we're all looking for that Ponce de Leon, that magic cure, that elixir. And I wish it was in a simple thing, or we could give everybody that, because I would be on a nice island and doing kinds of stuff, but that doesn't really exist. So I think there are multiple different things where we can protect ourselves, as well as there are certain factors that we don't control. So there are some things. So the number one risk for having some of these neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's disease is age. And then there is genetics. And so there are different risk factors for that. But then there are other factors that we can control. So our exposures, how well we do with certain kinds of stressors, how well we have in our heart, as well as protecting our brain, as well as very important, which is a lot of research that's also occurring at WashU, is the role of sleep. Sleep is extremely important for everybody, because it is something that helps us kind of clear out all that stuff that is building up every day in us. And if we don't have enough of that sleep, then these kinds of changes can lead to Alzheimer's disease.
So again, you are looking for our participants. How can they find you?
That's great. We are actively looking for participants, so there are different ways they can contact us. One is by telephone at 314-747-5477, or they can also look us up on our website at aabcstudy.wustl, so wustl.edu. And we're looking for 70 and older, looking at those individuals and trying to see specifically what kinds of things that are doing well versus those that are not doing as well.
Dr. Ansys, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
That is Dr. Beau Ansys, neurology professor at Washington University School of Medicine.